Today we're going to talk about kashrut, and I don't know where all your backgrounds are in kashrut, so we're just going to move through basic information and deeper information, and stop me for questions as usual. So, what does the word kosher mean? Start with that, and I'll let you answer me. Kosher. What does kosher mean?
Clean.
Good. Excellent. Let's start with the definition of kosher. Kosher means fit or appropriate. You could have a kosher business deal. You could have a kosher relationship. You can have kosher food. And it can be not kosher, too. It has moved into the American lexicon, at least in New York. Kosher meaning fit or appropriate. It doesn't mean clean. And it doesn't mean holy. However, those words will be part of the explanation later on. But it means fit or appropriate. Kasher. Kosher. And kashrut, or kashrus, just like Shabbat and Shabbos, right? Kashrut or kashrus refers to the entire body of kosher laws. Kosher is the adjective, kashrut is the, I guess that's a noun, right? Right. So, okay, so kosher. What's the opposite of kosher?
Treif.
Unfit.
So, really, so unkosher would be the exact opposite. Treif is what we use, right? So treif is colloquial, and we'll talk about the actual definition of treif, too. But it doesn't actually mean not kosher. It has its own specific meaning. But the same way awesome has its own meaning and the meaning that we use today, so treif has a specific meaning, and it also means the opposite of kosher. So, and that's also used in business deals, in relationships, in things like that, that the, as the opposite of kosher, it's treif. You know, a treif concept, a treif, yeah. So a treif interaction. So, okay, so kosher. So kosher means fit or appropriate for Jews, basically, because it doesn't mean fit or appropriate for anybody else. The Jewish halacha refers to Jews. So let's just start with actually what is kosher, and then we'll go into reason. So one thing that we know for sure is that this is not a health food plan, and this is not a, right? It's not health food, and it's not superstitious, and it's not, I mean, it's not about not getting trichinosis. If you look at China, it turns out that a large pork-eating nation is pretty healthy and has reproduced pretty well over the centuries with plenty of pork in the diet. And it's, or if you look at the Mexicans, or if you look at anybody who eats a lot of pork, this is not a problem. Shellfish, too. I mean, yes, there may be some health benefits that come along with, but it's not for health. So it's actually in the realm of laws called a chok. So we have different realms of Jewish laws, some that help perpetuate the religion, some that make sense, and some that don't make sense. So perpetuate religion, Passover Seder, right? Blow shofar, right? Some that make sense, honesty in business, honor your parents, right? Some that don't make sense, keep kosher, don't wear linen and wool together, right? So these are different categories of Jewish laws. This is in the category called chok. Doesn't make sense to us. Makes sense to God. We just do it because God says. That being said, and once we understand that, then we can look at why we keep kosher, why the laws are there. After we understand that we can't understand it, then we can look at what we might be able to get on the way. So, okay, so let's start with first definitions of terms here. So what is kosher? We'll start with animals. So we basically have three categories of animals. We have land animals, sky animals, and sea animals, right? And each one has their own list of what's kosher and what's not. So let's start with the sky animals. There's actually a list in the Torah. So of birds, there's actually a list in the Torah that says which birds you can eat and which birds you can't. And it goes by that list, basically, which just parenthetically is why turkey was a question. Because turkey's not listed. As a kosher animal or as a non-kosher animal.
Doesn't fly.
Right. And is it a sky animal? Is it a land animal? So it is considered a bird, right? So, we're going with sky animals for all birds, even if they're not technically. Penguins, I guess, would also count. Or are they water? And it's a question. But basically, there's lists. If it's not on the list of kosher birds, we don't eat it. Except for turkeys. And some people don't.
Really?
So, for instance, Rabbi Kagan at the yeshiva does not eat it. However, he does not hold that it's not kosher. Mm. So he permits it to be cooked in yeshiva, and he'll eat off the dishes that cooked it, but he won't eat it. Because there's no tradition for it. Mm. So it's not, it is considered, the ruling is that it's kosher, but since there's no tradition, there are some people who won't eat it. So that's the birds. For fish, for sea animals, water animals, they have to have fins and scales. So if it lives in the water and doesn't have fins and scales, we don't eat it. So we do have an understanding that everything that has scales has fins, but not everything that has fins has scales. Right? So sharks have fins, but no scales. But anything that has scales will also have fins. Right. There's not, so as far as we know, we have not yet found a fish that has scales but not fins. So that means we don't eat any of the crustaceans, we don't eat any eels, we don't eat any octopi, things like that. So just fish with fins and scales. Yeah.
It's not because some of them are bottom dwellers.
Oh, so that's a and afterwards. Okay. So the and afterwards is, yeah, so it turns out that a lot of ones that we don't eat are bottom dwellers. They eat garbage. So we are what we eat, which we'll talk about also. Mm-hmm. But it's not that God said don't eat bottom dwellers or bottom feeders or scum eaters, right? It does turn out that some of the things that we don't eat eat unhealthy things or do unpleasant acts. Right? We only eat vegetarians. When somebody asked my son, are you a vegetarian? He's like, no, I eat vegetarians. He has a shirt that says, I hamburger cows. Just has a picture of a hamburger.
So. Catfish
is not kosher. And tuna is kosher.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Has fins and scales. Shark, not kosher. Dolphin is not kosher. Whale, not kosher. Seals, not kosher. But a lot of other fish is. Now, coming from New York, I didn't know this halacha, but once I moved to Colorado, I learned, and might be helpful for people who live in Israel, you can buy fish in any non-kosher fish selling place as long as you can see the fins and scales.
So skin on it.
Right. You have to have the skin on it, except salmon. Mm. Salmon is the only kosher fish you can buy without seeing the skin, because there's nothing that looks like salmon that's not salmon.
Except
for steelhead trout.
Trout.
Which is salmon and kosher.
It's still.
I mean, it's in the salmon family. They're cousins.
Yeah.
They're cousins, and they're both kosher. So there is no fish that looks like steelhead trout or salmon that's not kosher. You can't confuse it. Whereas, for instance, tilapia and catfish look pretty similar. So if you just buy fillets, you don't really know what is that?
Right.
So you can't just buy fillets. But you can. Now, some people would bring their own knife to a store and their own cutting board and ask for somebody to fillet it for them with their knife and their cutting board. It's also, according to the Vada Kashrus in Denver, Colorado, not necessary. You are permitted to go into a store, see the fish, know that it's kosher, and then ask them to fillet that one for you and take home the fillets. You don't have to take home the bone and the skin and all that stuff. And it can just be on a rinsed off cutting board because it's all cold. So we're allowed to do that.
Even if they use a knife that they used on, for example, the other kind of
fish. Yep. Yeah. It's all cold. They can wash it off. And anyway, you rinse off the fish. You should rinse off the fish. And let's say you just buy a piece of salmon. You don't know what else was cut on that. So you just bring it home and you rinse it off, and that is fine. So So that's the fish. Animals. Animals, there's four families of animals that we eat, and they all have two signs, and that's cloven hooves, and they chew their cud. So the families are the cow family, the deer family, the goat family, and the sheep family. Anybody in those families. So that includes, I said deer, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes a lot of the African long-horned, pronged kinds of things that you see
elk.
In the zoo. Elk. Moose.
Bison.
Bison, there's also not a Masora for. There's also not a tradition for. Mm. So there was quite a bit of confusion. And there still is confusion today over whether the animal is domestic or wild, which makes a difference in terms of the hind quarter and about the blood. So there's a special mitzvah that you do with the blood of a wild animal. You cover it up. Maybe it's just a domestic animal. You have to cover the blood. Anyway, they're not sure, so they don't eat the hind quarter, and they do cover the blood, so they cover both bases. But
you can eat the hind quarter of an elk?
So I am not 100% sure, but I think you...
Because isn't it still the same as a cow?
I'm not sure. It makes it... There is a difference, so I'm not going to say on this. I'm not sure.
All right.
But the hind quarter we could eat, except for we, Ashkenazim, don't. In this country, in Israel, they do.
Right.
So, and that's just because of the sciatic nerve. So once that nerve is taken out, then we're permitted to eat it. So sciatic nerve, I see questioning faces here. So move back into your Torah study with Rabbi Levin. You probably already came to the story of the struggle with Jacob and the angel. Right? So the angel injured Jacob in his thigh. So, and it says right there, and so until this day, we don't eat that. So yes, it's true that until this day, we don't eat that nerve where he was injured to remember that struggle of
like
any animal. We would take it out first. We take out that nerve first, and then we can eat the flesh around it. But
like when you buy a whole chicken or whatever?
Chicken is not animal. Chicken is a bird. Yeah, so we do eat birds. We eat the whole bird. Right.
So that's the difference.
Just the cow.
Wild or not wild is the
one you can and one you can't. I don't remember.
Wild is if it's kosher made, it's been treated that way.
No, it's not about the treatment. No, it's about there is a different category for wild and domesticated animals, and I am a little shaky on that since we don't usually eat wild animals, so I don't really know the halacha on that. So I'm not going to say on that. But in general, we do either not eat the hind quarter. So in this country, that's our practice. We only eat the front half of the animal and sell the back half to non-kosher, which is one reason why kosher meat is more expensive. Because not only is there the additional supervision and the hand killing of each animal, so there's the supervision cost, the hand specially trained killing cost, and then the fact that you're only using half the animal, and the back half gets sold at treif meat prices rather than kosher meat prices. So you have to absorb all that cost in the front half of the animal.
So there's never a situation where it's kosher hindquarter where that nerve has been removed and then you can remove it?
Yes, in Israel they do that. In this country we don't have that custom, so we don't do it.
Is there anybody that does do it, or is it because it's
there may be Sephardim that do it in this country.
Too pricey to do it? Or
no, Ashkenazim don't do it. I'm not exactly sure why we don't. Sephardim do it, and I think that's probably the difference. Why would they, though? It doesn't make sense historically, now that I'm thinking about it. When I explain another thing that I'll come to.
And they do it always in Israel? I'm sorry, this is...
I think they can. I think so, but it depends on the community if they'll eat it or not. So, but we don't do it in this country.
Can you just go back? The four animals were deer, cow, sheep,
goat.
Goat.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo.
Yeah, so buffalo, I guess, would count in the cow family.
But is buffalo wild or domestic?
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
we're not.
Yeah.
There's lack of clarity on that, so we treat it as both.
Lamb.
We're stringent on both, lamb and sheep.
Right, okay.
Right.
Aren't goats and sheep the same?
Not really.
No. I don't think so.
They look like it, though.
Yeah,
I think they're separate animals.
They are
boy categories.
Sheep, I thought.
No. It's definitely not a boy sheep.
A ram.
No. They're male and female. I know.
Yeah. Who eats goat? Oh, well, I guess.
Yeah, so we don't eat a lot of goat. Goat are small animals. They're not really worth it to raise for meat. They're gamey, right. So we don't do a lot of goat eating, although in the Torah there's goat offerings,
right.
And we talk about
right.
goat offerings and what that is. So you could offer a goat or a sheep.
But an ox was an offering too. What was that considered?
So that's cow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cow. So, and goats today in this country are mostly eaten by Arabs and Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common.
And was that the reason for that, for like almost, well, anyway, many months you couldn't buy? First, you could buy bison, kosher bison, and then you could.
You're saying right now?
Here?
Maybe within the last year and a half.
That's
there was a time you could buy bison, and
right.
then all of a sudden you
I could tell you the whole story of that. It's a whole long story. It has nothing to do with kosher. It has a lot to do with politics and a lot to do with money.
Oh.
So,
right,
it's nothing to do with kashrus at all, especially in the recent time. You will, if you find some older kashrus books, you will find books that say bison is not kosher. But it's been ruled and accepted today that bison is kosher. It's not a question. But because of, there was only one plant, we just happened to be friends with the owner, so I just know the whole story. There was one plant, it went well, they needed to expand, they expanded. That didn't go so well. They quadrupled their size, but they didn't quadruple their bookkeeping capacity.
Mm.
So they kind of fell on hard times, which meant they had to then sell out some of the shares to New Yorkers who weren't as careful as that company, and it became a whole political thing and a money thing and run from a distance. And now the owner of it, the initial owner, just pulled out and said, I'm not part of it anymore. So now it's only run by New Yorkers, who are now, because of the whole Rubashkin thing, are now mostly doing beef and not bison. So, But you should just know if you do get the bison that it is shechted in a Temple Grandin designed kill box specifically designed for kosher bison slaughter. Do you know who Temple Grandin is? She's a woman with autism who thinks like animals, who designs about a third of the slaughter facilities, the humane slaughter facilities in this country are designed by her. So she was hired specifically by the owner of this plant to design a bison slaughter box. Because bison slaughter is a little trickier. First of all, they're much more wild than cows, and they have a big beard. And the slaughter, so I'll use this as a slight segue into slaughter, kosher slaughter requires one cut across the neck that severs the trachea and the aorta, but doesn't cut through them.
Right.
So it has to be more than half and less than 100% cut. If it's 49%, not kosher. If it's 100%, not kosher. It has to be somewhere in between 50 and 100% sliced through with one cut only, with absolutely no nicks in the knife. It's the sharpest knife that we can possibly make. It has to be checked in between every single slice with the fingernail across it. So every single cut. So just like when you get a cut with a paper, you know, or something where you don't even feel it until it gets wet or until it starts to itch, right? They don't even feel the cut. It's the most humane way that we know of today to kill an animal, because they don't feel the cut at all. They lose consciousness before feeling. So it's one cut straight across. However, a bison has a big beard, right? So they have to be shaved first, and they're wild. So they, right, so and if they get shocked, it releases adrenaline into the meat, and that's not healthy. It's not tasty, and it's not healthy, and it makes it harder to handle them. So a kill box was designed, first of all, a way for them to walk in so they wouldn't see each other, so they wouldn't get nervous, was designed. And then the kill box that when they go into the box, it gently lifts them up and gently hugs them so they can't struggle, right? And so it lifts their feet up off the floor and gives them a gentle hug. And then something comes that helps extend their neck, and then they can be shaved and then killed. So that...
Now, is the shaving done by hand or
yes.
by machine?
No, by hand. No, not by a razor, by like a sheep shearing kind of
right.
a machine. Yeah, but by a person standing there doing each one individually. Yeah.
Just a couple comments. One, on demand on Comcast, you can get the Temple Grandin
movie. Oh, cool. Good to know. I'm going to write that down.
And then the other thing is...
The what movie?
The Temple
Grandin. Can I borrow your pen
from you? Temple Grandin. Not documentary, but it's a movie about it.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. About her autism and all that. And then the other question is there in kosher raising of a kosher animal, are there specifications about hormones and antibiotics? And
okay,
like
excellent. So let's get to that. Okay, so now, in order for the animal to be kosher, it has to come from one of those four families, okay, with those two signs in each animal. And then it has to be killed in a specific way, right? But before that, it has to be a healthy animal. It has to be an animal that's not showing any signs of disease that would cause it to die within a year. So how do you see that? So clearly, if you see visually that the animal is not healthy, you cannot kill it for kosher. But then we check it further. So that it's a good question. With hormones and stuff, there are questions. Because with the hormones... It's not that the hormones themselves make the animal non-kosher. However, there are certain hormones that just make the animal develop so quickly that they can't live for a whole year. Like, for instance, some chickens. So there are cautious questions in some chickens because they breed for such a heavy breast that they might tip over and then not be able to live. Their muscle, their thighs couldn't hold them up for long enough that they could if the trajectory went down. Not that they're an unhealthy animal, but they couldn't live for a year. So there are cautious questions there, and I think they're unresolved. I don't know the answers. I read a long article on that, but I don't know all the answers to that. But there is such a thing. But now let's go to the big animals, okay? So this is where GLOT comes in. Okay, so you visually inspected the animal. The animal looks healthy, and now, so it's coming from one of the families. So it's been visually inspected. It looks healthy, and now you kill it. So now it's been killed properly. Now you have to check it to make sure that it was that healthy. And so how do we do that? We basically check it by looking at the entrails and the lungs. We inspect the lungs. So the lungs are the major place. So you quickly can check by a visual inspection of the entrails. If something's wrong with them, you can tell right away. But the lungs are trickier. Is there a lung disease that will cause the animal to die within a year? So the lungs are, first of all, blown up. It used to be blown up by mouth to see if there's any leaks. If there are any leaks, then you check the lesion that's there. Now that's blown up by a machine. You can put it on a, there's a foot press, and it just blows air into it, and you can blow it up. Check for lesions. And then there's a manual check inside the passageways to feel for spots. So when you're feeling for the spots, there's different types of spots. Does that spot that you feel, in, you were looking, you hope that it'll be totally smooth, which is what glot means, smooth. If it's smooth, glot, there's no question. If it's not smooth, then there is a question. What does that spot mean? Is that spot a spot that shows a lung disease that means they can live with it? Chronic low-lying asthma, that's okay. You don't die from that. Pneumonia, untreated, yeah, die from that, right? So is that, what is this disease? So I just gave two examples. I don't know if cows have, but but I'm just giving examples here, right? So what is this disease, and what does that indicate? So that has to be checked out. Now, in the Ashkenazic world, because we lived in Christian lands and the Christians weren't so nice to us, we are very lenient with those spots. Because we would buy, the way it worked in Europe was we would buy an animal, kill it, check it. If it wasn't kosher, it was a total loss, because the Christians knew, tough on them, we'll buy it for 10 cents on the dollar from them. And they got nothing out of it, really. But in the Muslim lands, where they required some, their own type of ritual slaughter, and Jewish slaughter counted, there was partnership. And so they would have one slaughterhouse for the city where the Jews slaughtered. If it was kosher, the Jews bought it for $1.10 on the dollar. Or if they didn't like it, the Muslims got it for the dollar. Or if it wasn't good enough for the Muslims, so the Christians got it for 90 cents on the dollar. But there was that partnership. So then the Jews were able to be very picky. And they were. So Sephardic Jews, religious Sephardic Jews, very observant ones, their hechsher is called Beit Yosef. And Beit Yosef means glat, glat, totally smooth, no questions at all. And bison, by the way, is 90% glat. So the bison, this person that shefted the bison, who's no longer doing it, but he's Sephardic, and he only went for glat, 100% Beit Yosef. So he would sell what Ashkenazim would eat for glat as treif, because he only went for Beit Yosef. It was totally, but they are much healthier animals. They kosher out at a high percentage.
I was just going to say that, to talk a little bit on what you said about industrial farming and the cruelty to animals and stuff, because Michael, my husband, and I have talked on that, even to the yeshiva, about how they raise animals right now. There's a group of conservative Jews who are making a movement so that it's not just kosher, but the animals are raised humanely, because right now, the animals that are conventionally industrially farmed are considered kosher, and they are not humanely raised. Rabbi Franklin was saying that sometimes what's happening is industrial farming has only been there for about 20 years, since about the late 80s. And he said that we're lag behind
in our
ability. The rabbis lag behind, and what they're going to say is considered kosher. And down the road, they might say that we can't even consider an animal industrial farmed as being kosher because it's inhumane what they do to animals. Mm-hmm. For instance, they cut the horns off the cows because they want to pack them in tighter, they cut the tails off pigs, and they can't walk, they can't move, they're in tight cages.
Right, right. So we have clear halacha against what's called tsar balei chayim. We're not allowed to cause them.
They are allowing industrial farming.
That's correct. Right, so that's, so it's, so those two laws actually don't converge at this point. So it is a Jewish law that we are not permitted to cause an animal pain. Not allowed to taunt an animal, you're not allowed to make it hungry, you're not allowed to mistreat an animal. You are allowed to eat an animal, that's okay. And you're allowed to wear an animal. So if you need the skin, if you need the leather, if you need the food, you're allowed to do it, but you have to do it humanely. You feed them beforehand, you treat them nicely, you kill them quickly, and the whole process is done with respect. So now the question, that's what makes the animal kosher. So far, the laws of treating an animal and kosher food haven't come together. So there are some questions today, for instance, with foie gras, which requires the inhumane treatment of geese to produce, is that kosher or not? Veal, is that kosher or not? Veal are taken away from their mothers right away, and they're raised in cages so that they can't move at all, so the meat will be very tender. Is that kosher or not? So these are questions now that are circulating. So far, it hasn't been ruled to be not kosher, but it's not considered to be sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how about the practice of, I mean, this is a common standard industrial practice in cattle, is that you feed cows to cows. I mean, and to me, I can't see, you know, considering don't boil a calf in its mother's milk,
right.
How can
right.
that produce a, I mean, from the very basis.
Right. So how could that, so I don't know how that, I don't know how that works. I don't know. And I don't think that that, again, I don't think it yet has converged. There is, just to throw one more wrench into the entire system, it is considered, I just described how a bison is slaughtered, but the lamb kill box designed by Temple Grandin satisfies all Jewish stringencies, which the bison box does not satisfy, which is why bison cannot be sold in Israel yet, because the preferred mode of slaughter is upside down. So the Temple Grandin box for lamb, because that plant did bison and lamb, the lamb goes in, again, it lifts it up, it gives it a little hug, flips quickly, shecht, and out it goes, right? So it's a very quick shecht. Shecht, shechita is slaughter, shecht is the, I guess, the verb
Why
for it.
Why do they turn them over?
Because that is the preferred mode of slaughter. I think that's because
pain
it helps the...
Or no pain?
I think it helps the blood drain more quickly, and I don't know. So however, so that box is not cruel. But the general way of upside down slaughter is. Because the way that they do it is they first hoist the live animal, a cow, in chains, upside down, and then move it along a conveyor belt, and then shech them.
Yeah, so they're already
not okay. This is not okay. And yet, this is used. So that is used in industrial slaughter, and it is used in kosher slaughter. So this is a question, especially if the line gets stopped. Right, if an animal looks questionable and they're not sure if it's kosher and they're opening it up there on the spot with other live animals upside down, and so now you're really causing pain to animals. So again, I don't think that yet kosher laws and not causing pain to animal laws go overlay each other, so that if you are causing pain to an animal, you then render the animal not kosher. That's not the way that we currently rule. That may be what happens in the future. It is not the way that it's ruled today. So do we need to be humane? Absolutely we do. Do we need to figure out how to produce the quantity of kosher meat that we require today? Yeah, we have to figure out how to produce it in a way that's humane to animals. So we do have some catching up to do. No question about it. Okay, so that's basically animals. So then the blood has to be drained. Now, so it has to be from a kosher family, it has to be killed in a kosher way, it has to be inspected for health, and then it can't have any blood in it. So the final part of the process is soaking it. Soak and salt. So we first soak it, then take it out, salt it with kosher salt. That's why kosher salt is the bigger crystals, not because the salt is kosher, but because really it should be called koshering salt, because it's meant for koshering animals. So in the olden days, every housewife did this. Today we buy it already koshered. So when you go to the, it's called kosher made is the technical term, but anything you buy in the deli is kosher made already. So we don't even know about this process because nobody does it. But grandmothers, great-grandmothers, that generation, they would all bring home their meat or their chickens, have to, and then soak it, sprinkle it with salt, let it drain on a special board. They all had special boards for this purpose, and then rinse it off. So we buy that already. For that reason, kosher meat can be a problem for heart patients because it has high salt content. So if that's the case, it is possible to a second method of koshering, of removing the blood, is broiling it or cooking it on open fire. So it's possible to order meat specially and cook it that way if you need a lower salt diet. Okay, now treif. Now let's say what treif is. So treif is an animal that really means...
Talk about sky.
Pardon?
Sky animals.
Oh, right. Okay, good. Fowl has to be killed in the same way, and it has to be soaked and salted. We don't check the lungs. So it does have to be an animal that looks healthy, but we don't have a lung inspection requirement. So that's just for the land animals. Sea animals do not have to be killed in any specific way. It should be humane, but there is no law about it. They're actually considered technically, halachically dead when removed from the water. So there is no slaughter necessary. Fish are parv, can be eaten with dairy, unless you're Sephardic, which they don't eat. Some Sephardim don't eat it with, so lox and bagels and cream cheese. Some Sephardim would not eat, or they'd have tofutti cream cheese with their lox. They would, again, they wouldn't say it's not kosher, but they don't eat it together. And all kosher-keeping Jews don't eat meat and fish together, which is why fish is served first and you have two forks, not because we're Protestant and because we believe in the proper, right, fork, but because you don't mix at all. So you have a fish plate and a fish fork, which is cleared, and then the meat is served.
Isn't there usually a time period, though, between...
No time period between fish. So that's why often a l'chaim, a palate clear or something like that, either a shot, a piece of bread, a drink of water, something in between the fish and the meat. You don't usually go straight from one to the other. But just no time is necessary.
Why
just
is that?
So why is that? That's an excellent question. And it is not kashrus. It's actually Kabbalah. So it's considered dangerous to have fish and meat together. It's a capitalistic
thing. It
makes
you sick. It's supposed to, fish and meat together are supposed to make you sick.
You can have it in your
stomach.
It's considered a danger, but it doesn't say what danger. Oh. So you can have it in your stomach together. You don't have to wait.
Right.
But you just can't cook it together or eat it together.
And you don't have a separate, I mean, you have dairy plates and you have meat plates, but you don't have a fish plate.
Correct. You can serve fish on either one.
And what? Fish can, therefore, that, so... Okay.
There are some people, I have seen people, but I don't believe that the halacha requires this, but I have seen some people who have a separate fish pot that they use only for fish, and I once saw somebody who had baked fish in her oven, and then she koshered her oven before she baked meat in the oven that same day. But I don't believe that the halacha requires that. That's not considered. Fish is considered parv. So,
that was my daughter's question over Shabbos. Why is fish not considered meat?
Right.
It really is... a type of a meat.
Right. So shall I make that question even more difficult for you? Why is bird considered meat?
Right.
It's not. However, fowl is not fellaciac. It's not meat. However, because it looks so meaty, more meaty than fish looks, it really does. The flesh looks very different. The sages ruled that we treat it like meat. So birds are not technically fleishik, the Yiddish word meaning meat. Comes from flesh, right? They're not technically fleishik. However, rabbinically they are, and so we treat it 100%, and somebody is just as fleishik after eating a piece of chicken and has to wait the same amount of time as they do after a piece of meat. According to the family tradition, some people wait more time for meat than for chicken, and there's all kinds of things with that. Right, so there is a distance weighted between meat and dairy. Between dairy and meat, usually there's not a time. Some people will wait a half an hour. Some people just rinse.
But it's still in your system. See, I don't understand that.
Correct.
Like, we did that yesterday, and we waited, but...
So it's not about system. Fully.
It's just about...
The meat possibly is about being in your system.
Or in your mouth, or in your teeth.
I understand that. So the meat is,
and
not the dairy.
What's
the time period? So, between meat and dairy... Depends on what country you come from. So if you are a Dutch Jew, it's 1 hour. If you are a German Jew, it's 3 hours. If you're any other Jew, it's 6 hours. If you're a Sephardic Jew, it's a full 6 hours. If you're an Ashkenazic Jew, often it's into the 6th hour. So it could be 5 hours and 5 minutes. Some people say the better part of 5 hours. So 5 hours and 35 minutes. Right? If you are a 3-hour waiter, it's not into the third. It's 3 full hours. You have to be very careful.
Make it a
then I also read something about, like, children. It's their certain age that you teach them, like, when they're little, that they only have to wait an hour or something.
Right, so it depends on their age. You do not make them wait the full
right.
time. So with a baby, like, really until, let's say, for sure, even a 2-year-old, up till about 3, you just clean their face and their hands and their high chair. And then you can give them one after the other,
right.
Even in the same meal, back and forth. You can give them no problem. But once they understand meat and dairy, around 3-ish, depending on the child, 3 is considered the age of education. But that's like, you know, that's just a line in the sand. It could be a little before, a little after, depending on the child's ability to understand. You start to separate. So you might just separate by concept. You just ate fleishiks. You can't have milchiks now. But now you clear the table and the kid's in the kitchen with you and says, I want a bottle, you hand it to them, you know, at 3, you know, if you're still giving them a bottle or a sippy cup with, you know, with milk. Because they're done. Time is done for them. The meal is over. This is a new time zone. However, by 5, they certainly can understand time and a clock. And by then you might say, in an hour, and you can show them on the clock. You can have, but you're not going to make them wait 3 hours or 6 hours yet. At 5, you wait until they're 8, 9, 10. You increase until, you know, closer to age 9, 10, then they wait whatever the family waits.
So it's different if you eat meat and then go to dairy than when you eat dairy to go to meat?
Correct. You can go from dairy to meat without waiting. In general, some people wait a half an hour. But meat to dairy is the, that's where all the customs are. Except for, to make it just a drop more complicated, aged cheese. So 6 month plus cheese. So new cheeses don't count, and a lot of our cheese is pretty new. But cheese that's been aged for over 6 months then falls into the category of aged cheese, and for that we wait the same that we wait for whatever our family custom is for meat, that's what we wait for that dairy. So usually we're only, I mean, what's in the kosher kitchen today, the main thing you have to be careful with is Parmesan sprinkles. Because that's real, it says on the bottle, aged over 10 months.
Right.
Right. So that's the cheese that you have to be concerned, that's in most kosher kitchens that you have to be careful with, is the aged Parmesan.
Oh, no.
We have to go faster here. Okay, so we did fish fowl. Okay, so milk. We have to go faster because we have to get through my sheet here. Okay, so that's the animals, basically.
You haven't
gone
through one of your sheets yet.
I know. I did it once. I did.
That's because you came back to do it.
We did
it
at time.
Yeah. It happens. Occasionally I finish.
It's just an observation.
We're trying. Okay. Okay, milk. So milk as a concept, we can have, and so let's just make milk into a broader category, product of an animal. We can eat products of kosher animals only, except bees. We eat honey. Honey isn't technically a bee product. It's just bees are using their tongues and their spit to distill flower nectar into something yummy. That's what it is. It's bee spit and flower nectar. So next time, enjoy your honey. I know. I think about that because I haven't yet tried agave nectar, and I'm thinking, why am I averse to trying agave nectar, which is basically maple syrup from a cactus, and yet I'm happy to eat bee spit.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is that?
Because they haven't made it, so there's not so many kosher agave nectars.
No, you can get agave. There is kosher agave nectar, and we have some. I just haven't tried it yet because it creeps me out. And I'm thinking,
better.
Why does that? Why? What is that? Just because it's new? It's cactus juice. I could try it, but I haven't yet. Mm-hmm. Then I'd rather have honey, which I know where that comes from, and it's very weird. It takes two bees, one year, to make a teaspoon of honey, so I try to be very careful never to waste any, because and a year is a whole lifetime for a bee. So it's two lifetimes to make one teaspoon of honey, so I'm careful. Anyway, so milk. So that being said, we can have milk from any animal that's kosher. So yak milk, for instance, you could have. So we can have milk from any kosher animal, but we have to know that it's from a kosher animal. So that's where Chalav Yisrael comes in. Have you ever heard of Chalav Yisrael? Chalav Yisrael, as they pronounce it in this country, Chalav Yisrael. So Chalav Yisrael means that it has been, that milk has been milked in the presence of a Jew so that they can certify that this comes from a kosher animal. In this country, United States of America, and in some other countries, but in this particular country, we are permitted to rely on government testimony that the milk comes from a kosher animal, because our government is honest enough that we know, so Rabbi Moshe Feinstein ruled that we are permitted to rely on government testimony, that there's a broad enough and honest enough system that we know if it says cow's milk on the bottle, it's cow's milk, and we can count on that. We're not required to have it be watched by a Jew. So there is a leniency that permits us to have government-supervised milk. It is not, as people think, a stringency to drink Chalav Yisrael. That is the benchmark. You're supposed to drink milk that's been watched, the milking has been watched by a Jew. But in this country, we have a leniency that permits us to drink milk watched by the government. So, but there are some Jews who won't go by that leniency, and so they drink only Chalav Yisrael. Okay.
If the animal's alive, then what makes it kosher?
It has to be from one of those four families.
Right, but if it's cow's milk.
Right. It's let's say camel's milk or horse milk is not kosher.
Right. But with the Chalav Yisrael thing.
Oh, no. So that's a good question. Where would you have non-kosher milk? Why would that happen?
Yeah.
Okay, so in this country we don't do it anymore, so it's hard for us to think about it historically. Let's just roll the clock back 150 years to Europe or even to this country where milk was sold by fat content. fat content is a good thing. Nobody was overweight like us, right? Nobody was thinking they want low-fat milk. They're thinking, how can they get enough fat on them to live, right? So fat content was a good thing. It's tastier. So your milk sells by fat content, and it would be measured, right? So, but only cow's milk makes butter. So you're a farmer. You want to sell butter, and you want to sell high-fat milk. How do you do that? You have to take off all the cream to make butter, and now you're left with blech, skim milk. Right, and people don't want to buy that. So what do? You milk your pig, which has very high fat milk, and you mix it in with the cow's milk. Makes it a little yummier. Right, so now you're selling treif milk. Right, so that's why you have to have it supervised to ensure that it's only cow's milk or sheep milk or goat milk. Or I guess deer milk, but that's not really, not easily milked.
How do you know if beef is kosher, I mean, other than just from looking at it from the outside and the egg?
That's good enough for milk. It has to come from one of those four families and look healthy, and that's good enough. There are questions with hormones in these animals, too. And I don't remember the whole story, but I remember there was a whole story for a little while about people switching back to Chalav Yisrael milk because of all the hormones that were in milk, and did that render the animals, were they dying at a faster rate so that with certain levels of hormones they were not making it for a full year? So that would make the milk that came from them not kosher. That was a problem like 15 years ago or so.
And so are antibiotics not an issue because they make the animal quote-unquote healthier?
So I don't think antibiotics are considered a kosher issue.
I don't think so either.
Even though like adrenaline in the meat would be...
Right, so we're not up to understanding that halachically, what impact that has on us and how we should be regulating that. That's not part of the kosher laws at this point.
So, we've talked about the four animals of the four land animals. Why isn't a pig on that list?
Because they have cloven hooves, but they don't chew their cud, and because the pasuk that the verse specifically says no pigs, both.
Okay.
Both. Okay, moving very quickly here, because I definitely want to get down to the last thing. Fruits and vegetables, all kosher, except for the bugs that are in them, so we check them carefully. Bugs are not kosher.
Bugs.
So fruits, pretty easy to see, although dried fruits, we are careful, like let's say with a date or a... I once didn't do this, how I learned how to check figs. I once took a bite of a fig. It was kind of nasty. I don't know why I swallowed that bite, but as I swallowed and it was disgusting, and as I pulled away the other half from my face, I saw half a spider's nest.
Oh.
Yeah, and I haven't had a fig since. I eat fig Newtons, but I don't eat whole figs anymore. There's just too many spiders in there, yeah. So you are supposed to open it up and check every fig, every date. You just check to see if there's little worms or spiders or things, which can be in dried fruit. Not so much in this country, but for sure in other countries there are. So especially we check, maybe not Californian ones, but anything from Turkey or Greece, or we check all of that stuff. Wine and grape juice, very quickly. Wine has to be made by Shomer Shabbos Jews, or it's not kosher. So that's for two reasons. One is idolatry. That it was very common in the ancient world for wine to be part of idolatrous service, and even in the winemaking process for part of it, for like good luck for the batch, to be poured off to an idol, and which would make the rest of it part of an idolatrous process, so the wine wasn't kosher. And you would want a Sabbath observant Jew to, because a non-Sabbath observant Jew maybe would be involved in some of those idolatrous practices. You couldn't necessarily count on their testimony that they weren't. So it had to be a Sabbath observant Jew making wine, and grape juice counts as wine. That's reason number one. Now that we're past most of that, we're pretty clear that that's not the case. We still have a prohibition, a rabbinic prohibition on wine, made kosher wine not being drunk because of intermarriage. Once you start to drink wine with non-Jews, you share wine with them, you get a little loose, you talk, you create relationships, you could get romantic, you could lose yourself, and it leads to intermarriage apparently. So... So we're careful in kosher wine to prevent intermarriage.
We're not. It's okay with vodka and tequila, but
so wine, right? Good. You're not supposed to drink with non-Jews.
I know. No, I'm just saying.
There's a fence for that, right? There's a fence for that.
So the question is, though, you could drink kosher wine with non-Jews.
You could. Some people wouldn't. I actually went to somebody's house once with my mother for Shabbos. And they weren't sure when they opened a bottle of wine if they were permitted to drink it or not, because my mother was there, and they went next door to the rabbi to ask if they could or not. So he said for Kiddush you could, but you shouldn't be drinking wine with the
other thing is you can't drink wine that isn't poured by a Jew. Even if it's kosher wine, it has to be poured by a Jew because it's poured.
What about people who are servers?
Right, so there's two types of kosher wine, cooked wine and non-cooked wine. And cooked doesn't mean like boiled, it just means brought to a certain temperature. And I heard a lecture where they just bring the, is it called must?
Pasteurized, kind of like.
The stuff before it's be called wine, must. Before it's made, it's called must, right? So they bring the must to a certain temperature, and then that's called cooked. So then the wine that's made from that is considered cooked, then anybody can pour it. But if they don't do that, then it can only be poured by a Sabbath observant Jew. Okay, quickly some reasons. I know you have to go, so we're going to skip the reasons. So we're going to get to the one main reason, okay, which is mouths. Okay, the one main reason. So keeping kosher has a lot of benefits. That's some of the reasons. It helps create discipline. It helps create identity. It helps create a separateness. So it's Jewish identity and communal identity. You meet everybody at the deli, right? You see Jews in the kosher aisle at King Soopers. Like, there is something about Jewish identity. You can tell people around the world by who's snacking on what where. There is a connection through kosher food. So it is about Jewish unity. It is about Jewish identity. There are some side health benefits. It turns out that kosher food is a little healthier, and the way that we eat is a little healthier, and the way that we soak in salt, it is a lot healthier, especially, let's say, chickens. Until it's soaked in salted, it can't be in warm water, so kosher chickens have more feathers on them because they're in cold water baths, not in warm water baths. But those cold water baths mean that there's much less salmonella transfer in kosher chickens. Much lower salmonella, much lower problems with all kinds of bacterial stuff in kosher slaughter than there is in the rest of the slaughter of this country.
But it's not for health reasons.
But it is not for health reasons. That is a side benefit.
It tastes like chicken.
Right. So the real benefit is the body-soul connection, right? So if you think about it, what is our mouth? What is this organ? What does it do? It has three main functions. So what are those three main functions?
Speaking.
Speaking.
Prayer.
Speaking.
Eating.
This one's hard.
I just read about it.
Gasping.
Kissing. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. Excellent. Right. That's what our mouth does. Our mouth is the opening that allows things to go from out, from in to out, and from out to in, right? So food goes in, words go out. It creates a connection between external and internal, and it creates a connection between people. And the most intimate kiss is a kiss. Well, kisses are all from the mouth. But the most intimate kiss is mouth to mouth, right? That exchange, that's the most intimate kiss. So it really is about intimacy, about connection. So food connects, words connect, kisses connect, mouths are about connecting. So food connects body and soul. It is, and you'll just have to take from other classes I've given you this understanding, food is the thread that sews body and soul together. Without food, your soul will float away. Right? It happens if you miss breakfast or miss breakfast and lunch, you don't pay as much attention. Often when you wake up from a nap, you just have something to eat or drink just to bring your soul back in. You need coffee for sure, I do anyway, when you wake up just to cement that soul back into the body. But after a couple of days, certainly after Yom Kippur, it's harder to concentrate and pay attention. Soul loosened, bonds of soul have loosened. After 3-4 days, the soul can float away, and the bonds can be not just loosened, but severed without food that keeps the soul in the body. So food is that thing that keeps body and soul connected. And it goes from the outside to the inside. It's also a connection of outside to inside. So there are those other reasons of Jewish identity and unity and some health and all that stuff, but really it's about this connection of body and soul. How do we keep this miraculous being that we are? We are body, we are flesh, we're dirt, and we're heavenly. How do we keep heaven and earth blended in one creature? It's through food. So the food that a Jew eats has to be special food that keeps body and soul together. And interestingly, it's through pleasure Pleasure is the vehicle that allows us to absorb the spiritual sparks, the spiritual vitamins in the food. So there are physical vitamins, and there are also Kabbalistic spiritual vitamins in the food. A blessing said before helps unlock them. But pleasure in eating, taking the time, paying attention, the consciousness in eating, is what allows one to absorb that into their body. It's the bioflavonoids, right, of the spiritual vitamin C that's in the food. Pleasure is what allows it to be absorbed. So that's kashrut in a super nutshell.
Adding a bracha, what did you say?
The bracha unlocks the spiritual sparks. They're unavailable to you without the blessing. So there is physical nutrition in food, and there's spiritual nutrition in food. Physical nutrition is available no matter what you do, no matter what you eat. You can get physical nutrition from a pig, too. But the spiritual nutrition is only available through kosher food and making a bracha on it. So when you say the bracha, you allow the spiritual energy to flow into you. It unlocks the spiritual sparks.
Unlocks, not L-O-X, locks. It's unlocks.
Unlocks. Releases. It releases
like,
the spiritual
I thought you were saying locks. I'm like, really, that's pretty spiritual. Right. I'm liking that. Right. What was that lady's name that had autism?
Temple Grandin.
Because my daughter has to. Brandon, B-R-A-D-E-N.
Grandin, with a G, I think. Yeah.
Grandin.
Temple Grandin.
Okay.